sitting down in front of me are two people that I want to talk to directly now, because recent movies like Dallas Buyers Club, Behind the Candelabra, and the newly released TV movie The Normal Heart, which was directed by Ryan Murphy, by the way, who gave us Glee, have all brought the issue of AIDS and HIV back into the media, dealing as they do with the horrific early days when the disease first emerged. If you lived through the 80s and 90s, you'll know exactly how much AIDS and HIV was talked about back then. There were celebrities backing AIDS charities, endless Hollywood fundraisers, widespread public health campaigns on TV and radio. AIDS and AIDS awareness was very much to the fore. But in the last decade, HIV and AIDS has dropped off the agenda. What happened to AIDS in the last decade? Why do we hear so little about it now? And how do we stand now in Ireland in terms of HIV infection? Well, to discuss this, I'm joined now by TV producer Bill Hughes, who lost many of his peer group to AIDS, and also by Anne Nolan, former executive director of Dublin AIDS Alliance, who has extensively researched sexual health policy in Ireland in the era of HIV/AIDS. Welcome to the studio, both of you. Bill, I'm going to start with you. Can you remember the first time you heard about the disease?
First time I suppose I became really conscious of it would have been around 1984. I was in New York, and I was starting to work with Vincent Hanley on MTUSA, and so we were spending a lot of social time in the West Village, the famous, you know, where everybody hung out in the bars, and everybody was talking about the gay cancer, and everybody was talking about this thing. I think it was called at the time HTLV3. I think that was the right, yeah, the
not been talking about it in Dublin before you left?
There was the whispers, but it was something that was happening over there, and it wasn't really something that people were very aware of. And so that was when, and then I started to see people with lesions on their faces in the West Village, and I said, you know, what's the matter with those people? And they were saying, oh, they have the gay cancer, they have the gay cancer, and this one. And it just was whispered, and it was, everybody was frightened of it because nobody knew what it was. All they thought was it was a plot by the government, by the Reagan administration, to stop gays having a good time. Mm. And they were going to put a stop to it, and that they had cultured this horrible virus in monkeys in Africa. I mean, these were all the wild stories, and that they'd brought it into New York and San Francisco, the two gay centres, and that they were killing all the gays. This was what people were genuinely thinking. So then as the calm sort of started to come in and people started to realise this was an actual condition, people I knew started to get it, and people I knew started to present with symptoms of, you know, massive night sweats, weight loss, pneumocystis, which was the lung infection, Kaposi sarcoma, which were the lesions, and this all started to happen. And then people started to get early dementia. Guys in their 20s and early 30s were getting dementia, and it was the plague. It was as if the plague had come. And you look at The Walking Dead now on TV, and that sort of zombie-like expression. It was horrific. Whereas these days, rather than putting a scare out there, these days people are living with the condition, but they're just not aware of how horrific it was at the start, and they're not paying attention. And as a result, the figures are going crazy through the roof again. People are getting careless, people are out there having unprotected sex, and the numbers are going through the roof of HIV infection in this country and around the world. There are 50,000 new ones in America, apparently, but there are 360 in Ireland last year. What's that about?
Okay, Anne, what is that about? Anne Nolan, Executive Director of Dublin AIDS Alliance, a former, I should say. Just tell me about that. In fact, currently a doctoral research in Trinity College in Dublin into the transformation of sexual health policy in Ireland in the area of HIV/AIDS. HIV and AIDS, what is it?
It's a bloodborne virus that is primarily sexually transmitted, or transmitted through sharing needles, or from mother to child is also the third route of transmission as well. Most of the cases now in Ireland are sexually acquired. So over 85% of cases are sexually acquired by men who sex with men, but also heterosexually as well. I mean, I suppose what Bill is talking about is, you know, a very, very different time. For our generation, we were extremely aware. There was a hyper level of awareness about HIV and AIDS because there were no treatments up until 1997 or 1995 when AZT became available, but actual antiretroviral therapy became available in 1997, and those drugs have constantly been improving to the extent that people now can expect normal life expectancy who are living with HIV. I suppose the real issue now is the fact that it has gone off the agenda really since 1997, because of course anybody who was diagnosed, as Bill has just described, in the 1980s faced a death sentence.
Not just a death sentence, but a horrific death, slow, lingering, painful death, where people didn't know how to treat them in the hospitals, people didn't touch them, people didn't physically engage with anybody who clearly was showing symptoms because they were terrified they were going to catch it off them. Like, because I lost so many of my friends, the number of people who then thought I had it would say, "And Bill, how are you doing?" "Well, I'm actually grand." No. And I knew that what they were really saying was, "So when are you going to die?" "Well, I wasn't going to die because for some reason I didn't get it and I have no idea why."
Bill, you're looking at the past and you're saying something like, you know, nobody knew and everybody was like scared about something like that, and you look upon it now as though there are problems but as though people understand and people are going,
"No, people don't understand."
I know. This is the point I'm making. Isn't it just that there's such a depth of feeling against transgender, against gay, against lesbian right across the world, and don't think it's not in here in Ireland as well, that the point is that, like, not enough people are going forward for testing and they meet a wall of discrimination if they do, and therefore that's just fueling the madness that will continue.
Absolutely, because people are having difficulty enough coming to terms with their sexuality. And when people say to me, "Why do you tell everybody you're gay?" I said, "Because it's important. Because people have to know that there are gay people out there functioning. I'm a successful relatively successful businessman who's had a decent career and who's got a high media profile. And I'm gay and I'm proud to say it. But there are so many people coming of age and down the country who are terrified to nail their colour to the mast, who are terrified to say."
And 30 years ago you could have been on the programme saying the exact same thing, and you would have thought in 30 years time things will be different. So Anne, let's just go back for a second. What was the official reaction to AIDS in Ireland when it was identified in the early 80s? Fear and terror and nothing to do with me.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean I think you could almost describe Ireland in 1982 not just as another country but another planet entirely. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, the legislation governing the contraception at the time was Haughey's Health Family Planning Act, you know, in which contraception was only available to married couples on prescription. There was a ban on sexual health education. The criminalisation of homosexual acts was still ruling. And the level of treatment for sexually transmitted infections were, you know, a cloak and dagger service, like in a couple of hospitals at night time, segregated along gender lines, you know, and a part-time physician deployed, like in the Dublin area.
All right, well, so then let's take a look at what it was then, because like Ireland, therefore, is what you're saying, was very ill-prepared and ill-equipped, obviously, to deal with the crisis that was AIDS in the 1980s. So what were the first progressive steps, if you like, taken in tackling the illness?
It really came from the gay community. Gay Health Action was formed in 1985. Gay Health Action were incredibly progressive. They produced the first public health material around sexual health and for HIV. It was primarily targeted at gay men, was extremely explicit and became very controversial as a result.
And by the way, homosexual activity at the time was illegal, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Until 1993.
The era of AIDS corresponds with David Norris battles in the courts and then to the European Court in 1988 as well. So this was kind of going on in the background too. The problem for Gay Health Action was that the state, because of their criminal status, couldn't fund them and also then didn't engage with them. So they got very small amounts of funding to produce public health material. And then, you know, ironically, I suppose it's very much indicative of the time that the national policy response actually came from the Catholic Church. It didn't come from the state. The bishops set up a task force and they engaged the gay community and facilitated a dialogue between the gay community and the state.
And if we can point to one person, as news items often try to do, to sort of normalise it or humanise it, Paul Lavelle.
Paul Lavelle was a very liberal priest who had been working in an inner city parish with families affected by drug use from the early 80s. And he went to the Archbishop of Dublin and basically asked him for some funding to set up this initiative. He was pro the decriminalisation of drugs, of homosexual acts. He was also in favour of, he made strong arguments for the legalisation of condoms. So he was extremely liberal and he went against the church line. So he was extremely progressive, and he was the person who really enabled a dialogue for the state. And because the church was taking this liberal pastoral response, it allowed the state then to move towards a more liberal agenda as well.
Okay, well, Bill, in what ways did the non-gay community deal with or react to AIDS? To get back to something I was talking about.
Well, of course,
earlier.
They were terrified. They just saw it was something that was happening to those people that we've always thought are, well, they're gay, you know, that's they're homosexual, they're queer, they're whatever. And so there was this sense where they were at a distance from it.
And was the gay community put into the same bucket as the drug users who shared needles?
Oh yes, and there would have been horrible slogans painted on gay bars outside, and you know, faggots go home, or faggots burn in hell, and Sodom and Gomorrah, and this is your destiny, this was supposed to happen, all horrible stuff that was written at the time.
This morning in the paper here in the Sunday Business Post, Fianna Fáil's Paddy McKee is one of the 8 openly gay councillors elected ahead of next year's gay marriage referendum, and he has to take down 7 of his posters during the election campaign in Kilkenny City after homophobic slurs were scrawled across them. And not just scrawled, he says it seems like a targeted attack. There were several posters at a reasonable height, so it wasn't some kid coming home after a few drinks. There were drawings and remarks, etc., and there's pictures of it.
Oh yeah, that's
still
not surprising at all, and that is the Ireland we live in today, and people have to stop thinking that we have a liberal agenda. We don't. And look at the reluctance of the government at the moment to really deal with the issue of marriage equality. That's why tonight there's a huge fundraiser at the Bord Gáis Theatre for the big gay thing to raise money for marriage equality, because it's needed. There's money needed to get out there and promote it. And while people think they should just write it into law, they can't simply do that, because the backlash, the unravelling of it would get so nasty. The government, just to end Kenny, needs to just get off the pot and say, lads, it's okay. You know, he does it about so many other things. Why doesn't he just do it about gay marriage?
Okay, but the treatment that I was talking about, the treatment which needs to be sort of for everybody, is not there. It's less likely to have success if people are afraid to go and do something about it. And is that what, like, for instance, like, you know, they tell me that like 80 countries in the world, homosexuality is illegal. In 80 countries in the world, there's only about 240 countries.
Well, that's why 10 years ago I did a film called Happy Birthday Oscar Wilde, where for his 150th birthday we got 150 of his best quotes, got them spoken by stars around the world. We did it through Amnesty to bring attention to the number of countries where homosexuals were being persecuted, and that's why so many Hollywood A-list stars said they'd take part in it, because they couldn't believe there were that many countries where it was still illegal to be gay. And now you've got countries like Ghana who want to exterminate gays. It's a scary world.
It is a scary world. So, Anne, while it was once considered a death sentence, let's just see where we have gone on then since. Charles Zahar, you mentioned the Committee of the Total Deregulation of Condoms and all the rest that you mentioned. Medical advances changed all that. So what exactly were the medical breakthroughs?
The breakthroughs were the development of antiretroviral therapies, which essentially slow the progression from HIV to AIDS. Just to kind of maybe move to, and to say that the treatment is free and available to everybody here. The big issue in Ireland is the number of people who are not accessing testing. So, for example, in 2013, 344 people tested positive. 46% of them were men who sex with men. And it's important to say, just, you know, because people can think, oh, HIV is something that still only affects gay men, only affects drug users and people in Africa. 38% of all of those who tested positive last year were heterosexually acquired HIV. Mm. And heterosexuals were actually the least likely to go for testing, and were actually presenting the latest. So many were actually diagnosed with full-blown AIDS. So they had AIDS-defining illnesses by the time they actually got the test. The problem, the later people test, the less positive your health outcomes are going to be in the long term.
Yeah.
So really the message is
the old prevention
that everybody
better than cure
should get
kind of
tested.
Thing, or almost like the earlier the better.
The earlier the better, absolutely. And the treatments are more effective the earlier you test and the earlier you are treated. And they're extremely effective. They can actually reduce the levels of HIV in the bloodstream to almost undetectable levels. And that is a benefit in terms of HIV transmission. And also, one of the core things in terms of public health is that 30% of people who are living with HIV today in this country do not know that they're HIV positive. And of course, they're the people, because they don't know they're HIV positive, are transmitting the virus unknowingly. So there really is, the message now, today, in 2014, is about getting tested, to get over the stigma that surrounds HIV and AIDS.
The stigma that surrounds HIV and AIDS, which Bill spoke about from 30 years ago, frankly, it strikes me as though it's got almost worse. It's gone underground a little bit in terms of, like, but it's actually got, the stigma is bigger.
Oh yeah, the stigma is much, much bigger. And that's why the work of places like the Guide Clinic in James's, Fiona Lyons, Fiona Mulcahy, great doctors who are doing their best to try and get people to come and test and to start the course of treatment that will help them have a better life. Those people are going unnoticed. It's just a shocking indictment of modern society that now we're afraid to have a campaign on the TV that says if you have unprotected sex, you could get HIV, which could develop into AIDS. What is the matter with putting out a health warning like that these days? People don't want to see it. People, they recoil from seeing the suicide notices. They recoil from seeing the drive slower. You're going to kill yourself. It just put up one about unprotected sex.
Okay, we'll take a listen to this here.
Most people enjoy an occasional gamble. The fun, the thrill. Even our relationships owe much to chance. But today, if you play around, the stakes are too high because you're gambling with AIDS. Meet someone who is an AIDS carrier, and although condoms give some protection, just one act of intercourse may give you AIDS and lead to death. Sleeping around is a gamble. Casual sex spreads AIDS.
That's from the 1980s, and that's a bit kind of finger-waggingly too scary. It's like playing chess with the devil there.
It's a bit Darth Vader-ish as well. Yeah. You know, it's a bit nonsensical, whereas people need to be related to on a human level and some kind of... Like, it's really amazing that one of the extraordinary surviving images of the whole AIDS crisis was when Princess Diana touched an AIDS victim. She went to a hospital and she touched the hand of a person who was suffering with AIDS, and straight away the world was told, it's okay, you can touch them, you're not going to get it. And that simple message sent shockwaves through the world, because so many straight people and even gay people had walked away from their friends who had it because they were afraid they were going to get it.
You do understand a little bit of the fear in some ways, surely, because you just mentioned the West Village earlier on. You mentioned lesions, you mentioned The Walking Dead and that. So people who don't have that will go, what the hell is going on? Is the plague in all our houses kind of thing here? So there is a level of, like, people had to find out.
Yeah.
Now, they did find out. And what you're saying probably is the fact that, you know, the fact that 30 years later it's worse is just completely unacceptable. You found out, now deal with it.
Yeah. And you just want people to start getting their act together and understanding that it is okay to promote better sexual health.
Right. Okay, I want to go back to when it all happened, because, I mean, just one thing again, just of that point, because in the mid-80s, the one thing we always heard about was Rock Hudson. Just take a little bit of this here.
Scientists at the National Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta today released the results of a study which shows that the lifestyle of some male homosexuals has triggered an epidemic of a rare form of cancer. Robert Bazell now in Atlanta.
Bobby Campbell of San Francisco and Billy Walker of New York both suffer from a mysterious newly discovered disease which affects mostly homosexual men, but has also been found in heterosexual men and women. The condition severely weakens the body's ability to fight disease. Many victims get a rare form of cancer called Kaposi's sarcoma. Others get an infection known as pneumocystis pneumonia. Researchers know of 413 people who have contracted the condition in the past year. One third have died and none have been cured.
Death didn't scare me. It was living with this for a long time. That's more frightening than death.
Bill, that goes right back. Go right back to Rock Hudson when the first big thing. Who was he and what was it?
Rock Hudson, the biggest star in Hollywood in the 50s, the matinee idol that made women swoon, and where the secret had always been one of those ridiculous whispers behind hands that, by the way, you know he's gay, you know he's one of them, and people didn't believe it. Well, suddenly when he started presenting, and he was on his deathbed by the time it was announced that he actually had AIDS, because he was so desperately trying to find a cure. He was flying from America to Paris for treatments that were not passed by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. He was trying everything that was known that would help him. In the same way that people had gone to Mexico for crazy cures for cancer, Rock Hudson was told, go to these places and get it. And suddenly there was this face of Rock Hudson where they were comparing, look at him in his heyday as this fabulous big Hollywood star. Yeah. And then there was this man whose face had completely collapsed, who looked 30 years older than he was and who was dying. And this was a presentation that shook the world. And everybody realised, oh, that is what the face of AIDS looks like.
And just to stay with the big screen for a second, Dallas Buyers Club recently, which brought it right back into whatever, like you mentioned about going to Mexico and all the rest of it, and not approved drugs in America because there's too much money involved and all that sort of, the pharmaceutical industry, etc. Did you think it was a good portrayal?
I thought it was an excellent portrayal, particularly given the paranoia of the time, because... Also, well,
that's early 90s.
Yeah, that was well, early 90s.
The first five years of the 90s.
But the paranoia was still rife. Like back in the 80s, when it was first discovered that HIV was transmittable through blood, the report stating that clearly laid on the desk of the health secretary at the Atlanta Center for Disease Control. It laid on that desk for 10 months and nobody acted on it. Mm. And in that time, 300,000 people were infected through blood transfusions. That's a shocking indictment of how afraid society
was. And just on that point, the Rock Hudson legacy really only came to any kind of good thing about 5 years after his death, into the early 90s as well, didn't it?
Yeah, but the New York Times at that time wouldn't publish the word gay. Yeah. They actually wouldn't use the word gay in an article. This was an editorial decision by the powers that be. You cannot promote gay by writing about it.
Well then, taking it back here, there's one here at 51552. We still live in a prejudiced Ireland. Bill is a great guy. So on that note, not on the Bill is a great guy bit, I don't know about that at all. That's another item for next week. What are the most worrying things that you see in the recent statistics on HIV in Ireland? I mean, as in, we still live in a prejudiced Ireland. I know that is definitely true.
Yeah,
are the most worrying statistics?
I think the thing of greatest concern is the fact that over 50% of people are testing late. And that really is problematic, as I said earlier, in terms of people not knowing that they're positive, waiting on until they're symptomatic in order to get tested. And I think the real issue is that we need leadership around that. We need Enda Kenny to go, you know, with RTE cameras on him, getting tested for HIV, to normalise that process. And that getting a test for HIV becomes routine in GP surgeries, in local community clinics, at your dentist if you're presenting with lesions in your mouth. You know, we need to normalise it to a far greater extent and say, you know, that HIV is, you know, it's sexually acquired. Let's, you know,
okay, but in normalising it, but in the normalising of it, how does one start the normalising? Like, if the church, frankly, you know, does nothing, if it's a stain on religion, they say, whatever, or the government is doing nothing, you gave it, what about the families and the communities who still will possibly turn against gay members of their family, or do they as much as they did?
They do. I know. from the experience of some of my friends and people I know who have told me that they've told their family that they're gay. They've come home from work that evening and all their belongings are outside the front door, packed, go and live somewhere else. And that has happened in this modern Ireland.
It happens, but it happens to a lesser extent. Bill, I sit on a board of an organisation called Belong To, which is for bisexual, lesbian, gay, and transgender young people. And there, you know, it's a nationwide network that supports young gay people who are coming out and supports them in disclosing their sexuality to their parents as well. They would report that growing up in Ireland now has become, obviously, it's not perfect for everybody, and there are isolated incidences like that where children are rejected by their families. But in the main, there are enormous supports there now and a far greater level of acceptance than there was in 1982, I think.
Yeah, but corporations won't get behind it. It's really funny. The list of films you mentioned, Behind the Candelabra, could not get a cinema release in America and didn't.
It was TV,
Dallas Buyers Club, it's extraordinary that it did, because Larry Kramer's play The Normal Heart, which they've just remade for HBO, and Ryan Murphy has made it. Ryan Murphy had to put his own money up to make it. Mm. He put the money he made out of Glee, he has used to make The Normal Heart, and now it's getting the best reviews of any programme on HBO this year. So corporations still won't get behind it. It's well-meaning meaning and altruistic people from the gay community who are helping the gay community themselves. And it's only very rarely that, you know, that you can see more positive action happening. And that's why we need to live in a better society.
Okay, well, the one way we could do that is a vaccine. Tell me about, like, you know, HIV. It won't be defeated. So, like, what is the situation?
I mean, there's been enormous progression in terms of developing treatments, you know, that are available in the West. You know, you can have posted, they're available in all of the A&Es across the country, is post-exposure prophylaxis. Anybody who may have come into contact with HIV through a risky sexual experience can go to A&E and request prophylaxis, which it operates in the same way as the morning after pill, for example, that can help fight the virus over a period of time, the potential for infection, and people often then don't acquire HIV even though they may have been exposed to it. There's also pre-exposure prophylaxis for people who maybe have very high, you know, high risk sexual lifestyles, for example. So there is enormous advances in treatment. People who are on treatment from early now, it's dependent on a number of factors, but if the virus is detected early and you are on the right combination of treatment, your chances of transmitting HIV are reduced by over 90%.
So it's one of the most important pursuits is to try, one of the most important goals is to try to eliminate the transmission of HIV.
Yes. I mean, if you think about it, like, of all the people who tested positive last year, 85% of those cases were sexually acquired. That's 85% that could have been prevented, you know, by using a condom. The treatments can also act as a prevention. So the better your treatment outcomes, the less likely you are to transmit HIV. So it's in everybody's benefit, the whole society benefit, to get tested, to get on treatment early.
Okay, well, Bill, look, there was a time when HIV was more prevalent among heterosexuals than homosexuals, largely thanks to the tireless health promotion work done in the gay community to raise awareness, promote safe sex. Things have slipped back now. Why is that?
People just get careless because so many young people now feel that I've just come into a world where it's okay to be gay, and now you're telling me I can't do what I want. So it's like you've given me this fabulous train set and now you're going to take it away from me. So people don't want, it's the give and take of understanding that yes, you've come into society and yes, it is wonderful that you can be accepted as a gay person, but it comes at a price, and the price is you have to have an understanding of what sexual health is. You have to have an understanding of the need to take care of yourself and to practice safe sex so that you don't put yourself in danger or put other people in danger. If you've been infected and you don't know you're infected, it stops you passing it on and it stops you catching it. So people just have to understand that. Okay. It's a very simple thing. Yeah. And it sounds like, duh, Homer Simpson, duh, you know. But young people, a lot of the young people don't want to know. They don't want to be told that suddenly there are rules.
And that's not just gay people. I mean, that's across everybody who's sexually active. And changing behaviours is quite difficult. I mean, if you look at a lot of the Nordic societies, for example, it's very normal and standard for people to use condoms early in a relationship and then to go for a full sexual health screening. Whereas we haven't reached that level of sexual maturity in this country, I think, yet.
I like that term, sexual maturity.
Sexual maturity. Okay, well, finally, just want to ask you, Bill, about that. Like, you know, does the complacency, obviously, that exists at the moment worries you greatly? You started off by saying that 360 new cases, 160% increase amongst men who have sex with men. Did all of this politicise you and make you, if you like, a better person or, you know, just...
Oh, I can't... Yeah, I mean, what it did was it woke me up to the real world.
Because Vincent Hanley here from 2FM was like, you know...
Vincent was one of my best friends, I nursed Vincent.
Anybody who remembers MTUSA on those Sunday afternoons. By the way, it wasn't as though I ever thought the programme was that great necessarily. It was pretty dodgy, but it was just fab video.
It was new.
And now here we are in Washington Square Park, and here's three more videos from some boring out. Oh great, there's Easy Top one finally.
That's ridiculous in absurdum, isn't it? Isn't that where you just reduce something to you were happy enough to be part of it at the time.
Do you know something? I gave you the signature tune. It was a Rory Gallagher song. And by the way, it was his birthday yesterday. No, was he? I don't know. Was he? Anniversary anniversary of his death yesterday. Yeah. But I gave you it was the start.
Yeah, the great, really, really good. Yes. But just understanding that was the time that was. These are the times we're in now. There are new rules. There are wonderful organisations like Belong To, like GLEN, the Gay and Lesbian Equality Network, like Marriage Equality, just trying to make gay people understand that you fit into society. Yeah. There is a place for you, but it comes at a little price, and that price is, which is just behave yourself.
And Bard Gáis celebration tonight?
The big gay sing. The gay men's chorus from New York, all 240 of them, are in Dublin with Gloria, the Irish gay and lesbian choir, and Miss Panty. It's going to be this huge show of sing-along 80s tunes and showstoppers and big show tunes, and it'll just be the campus night ever, and all the money is going to help marriage equality. The big gay sing tonight at the Bard Gáis.
Bill Hughes, thank you very much, and Anne Nolan also. How's Trinity College treating you, all right?
Oh, very well.
Good, okay. Thanks a million, folks, for coming in. 51552 is our text, and at Dave Fanning Show is our address. What time is it there?